Welcome to Switchfoot Song Stories, a fan-run and operated podcast, not affiliated with Switchfoot.
Welcome to another episode of the Switchfoot Song Stories podcast. I'm your host, Tyler D. Smith. If you have listened to many episodes at all of this show, you would know that we obviously talk about Switchfoot. But the band that I probably talk the second most about is a band called Colony House. And today our guest is Park Cottrell, who plays bass and keys and background vocals for one of my favorite bands, Colony House. And we are stoked to have some landlocked surf rock on the show today. What's up, Park? How are you?
Hey, I'm doing good. How are you doing? Thanks for having me on the show.
I'm doing great. Obviously, a lot of Switchfoot fans are also Colony House fans. I think there's a lot of parallels between the two, and they've been a big influence on you guys. I was actually introduced to Colony House on the Tour de Compadres tour back in the day. That was my first taste. I've been a huge fan ever since. And awesome. Also went to the next tour that you guys did a handful of years ago. So first off, what are some of your memories from maybe going on tour with the guys?
Wow. The first one that comes to mind, so the Tour de Compadres tour was in 2015. That tour was broken up into two like big segments. I forget just how many shows we played, but it was a lot. Something like maybe close to 60 or maybe, I forget. But on the first half of Tour de Compadres, there's four bands on each leg. We were first, then it was Drew Holcomb and the Neighbors. And on leg one, it was Ben Rector and then Need to Breathe. On the second leg, it was us, Drew Holcomb, Switchfoot, obviously, which is what you're probably referencing, and then Need to Breathe. So in between those two legs, I got married. And so I remember my wife came out for some shows, hopped in the van with us. And I'm trying to remember where we were. We played a lot of most of the venues we were playing were amphitheaters, and a lot of times, you know, amphitheaters are not necessarily in the downtown area, typically not. So whatever town we were in, it was 20 or 30 miles, you know, one direction. And so it was just kind of where are we, whatever. And we played the show, and we hadn't really gotten a ton of one-on-one hangs with the Switchfoot guys yet. And like you said, you're correct. We all grew up being heavily influenced by all of their records. And so we were kind of just we didn't want to be the, you know, the fanboys that were knocking on their green room door or anything. All of our interactions, whether it was at catering or just out and about, were all very cordial. They're the coolest dudes of all time. But we didn't want to be those guys that were hey, can we hang out with you? So before we ever kind of had that ice broken, after this show, you know, we were getting in the van and oh, we got to drive a long ways. I think we didn't even do merch. I think we said after we play, we'll watch some Switchfoot. We'll watch the first half of Need to Breathe set. But then since we're in a van and trailer, we have so far to drive. And so we're all loading up in the van, and my wife and I, so I guess we were touring with, it was just five of us, which is crazy. It was the four band dudes, our tour manager / front of house engineer, and then this particular show, my wife. So there were six of us. So Allie and I hop in the back of the van, and we're just chatting because I know that Riley, our old tour manager, is about to start driving. And then we hear someone else get in the van, and it's John Foreman. And he's just like, "What's up, guys?" And we're like, we're all kind of, it's not that we were starstruck because we had already introduced each other, but just the hang thing. And he was just like, "What's up?" And we're like, "What's up with you?" And we ended up he chilled in the van with us and chatted for, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes. And all of us kind of kept looking around with the same expression. I'm like, "Wait, is did John Foreman get in our van? Is he just hanging out, asking us what's up?" And I mean, we eventually, explained man, we're not going to be able to make it to the next show without, getting to whatever city, halfway in between, blah, blah, blah. And he was like, "Y'all do your thing, but know that we want to hang out whenever there's free time." And there's something about, if you've ever met the guys, even just for a few minutes, the one thing, it freaked me out at first. but it's something I truly appreciate. They don't break eye contact. Like when they're talking to you, you don't have to guess if they care or are actually paying attention. Like when you're talking to them, they're just laser locked in. And it freaked me out at first because direct eye contact with the total stranger can be weird. As the tour went on, we had more moments of like just one-on-ones and hangouts and stuff. It was like, we quickly realized, man, these guys are just so genuinely down to earth, fun, way too ripped. They're jacked. Those guys just, they surf so much. It's like, well, they're going to be fine. They're going to live to be 120. But anyway, that's the first memory that pops to my mind. There's so many. I mean, like one of the first shows on that second leg of Tour de Compadres was, we played Red Rocks in Colorado. And I remember pretty much all of our wives came out. Actually, Caleb and Julia, their first child was like 6 weeks old and like, or maybe not that young, but like fresh, flew out to the show as well as like all of us with our ladies and them with their one kiddo. And we all, for pretty much the entire Switchfoot set, like went up in the stands and just like, I mean, if you've ever been, have you been to Red Rocks before?
I have not. It's one of my bucket lists. I got to get out there sometime.
It's insane. It is worth the, I mean, or the hype is real. And so we all just kind of like got to feel the weight of how cool it is that we were on tour with Switchfoot playing a place like Red Rocks. It was just, that was magical. Like I remember when they, what song was it? It wasn't Dare You to Move. It was, oh crap. I can't remember the song. There was one song where basically the whole band plus wives all like, even though we weren't all together, were just kind of like, oh my gosh, this is so cool. And then this wasn't on that tour, but I don't think it was a tour. I think we happened to be in San Diego doing something. We weren't playing their festival. Regardless, the Switchfoot guys, they were in town. They knew we were in town. And Chad had us over, like, just threw a big party and had us over at his house. And again, I mean, there was a ton of people there. And it was just like, there was nothing about it that felt put on or forced. It just felt like we immediately were just like a part of their regular old friend crew. And anytime that they say don't meet your heroes, that's not true of Switchfoot. They're just the best dudes. And I mean, the amount of songs that have influenced just me personally, but also all of Colony House, I mean, it's a long list. Yep. And obviously one of those songs, which we'll get to later, meant a lot to me in a different way than maybe some of the other songs do. But trying to think if there's another story. I mean, thinking about the Chad having us over to his house to do the party, to his party, makes me think of actually a non-Switchfoot related, but a San Diego specific. I guess it was on Tour de Compadres. We might have had a day off or something. Me and Caleb and Riley, our old tour manager, went to a place called Mitch's Marina Seafood Restaurant. I forget. I mean, it's Mitch. It was Mitch's Marina. And I had the greatest fish of my entire life there. It was a redfish torta, like sandwich. I love food. That sandwich changed me. And now anytime we're in San Diego and we're close, we go. And I still have yet to have a fish sandwich or fish in general that has topped that. Ooh, it's good.
That category, I had one, a restaurant right outside Fenway Park in Boston that was mind blowing. Don't remember the name of the place. If I go back to Boston, I'll be able to find it, but man.
Wait, so it was just like right around there, somewhere in there?
Yeah, you can see Fenway from the restaurant, but next maybe time that enhanced the whole thing. I'm a big baseball fan, so maybe that enhanced the whole taste of the fish, but still.
But still, it was probably fire.
Yep. What about the second tour you went with them? Was it, I'm assuming that your relationship with them was a little different. So that was more of maybe just, you know, good friends hanging out at that point.
Yeah, that one, that's exactly right. We played a lot of just kind of great towns, great venues. And, you know, we had so much. Everyone's a little bit different. Every individual's a little bit different on tour as far as like your MO. Some people stay up super late and sleep in super late. I'm like then there's the early risers and the early to bed. I don't necessarily go to bed early, but I always wake up earlier. I'm like one of the first people awake on our bus or whatever. But like, it was funny just kind of getting to learn, like, and none of it was like, how do I say this? Like Romy, just, you never know where Romy might be. He's just off doing his own thing and he's a quiet dude and brilliant. And so, you know, whenever we'd pass each other, it's like, what's up, Park? What's up, Romy? And it's like, I think that's mainly all I said to him that entire tour, which is totally fine. And then Tim, you know, Tim and John, definitely depending on if they're like doing press or, you know, like if they've got family out on the road or whatever, usually if there's family members out, you don't see them until the show. As you know, one could expect, it's like, well, if my wife and kids are here, then we're going to go out on the town and like go get food and go to the shops and stuff. So it's kind of just like a mixed bag, but as many days as we could, when all the dudes were around, it's like, hey, let's all just hang out for like 10, 15, 20, sometimes 30 minutes, just like in a green room, just be like, hey, no pressure. Whoever wants to come hang, and we're just going to chat. And those were always really special moments because, you know, some people would open up about like whatever's going on in their life. Other people would just kind of literally sit and listen. John usually had some poignant questions, you know, that he'd pose to the group. But it was all done in very much a all of us together leaning in as fellow musicians and brothers on the road. And those moments were really sweet. I actually, now that I think about it, the party at Chad's house was probably actually while we were on that, not the Need to Breathe tour, but when we were, that rings a bell. Yeah. It was just a lot of fun. Like, again, that tour was really the one that, since we had so much time with them, it's like, well, they're the exception to the rule with the whole don't meet your heroes, you know.
For sure. Definitely agree. What parallels do you see? Obviously, it's not like a carbon copy. You guys are your own thing for sure. But some parallels as far as influence or even live show or some of those things. Like, do you see any of those between the two bands?
Oh, for sure. I mean, Switchfoot, you know, when we were all like middle school and high school, you know, back when I think all of us might have heard Kim 6A for the first, like that was our introduction. I remember it was it's like I got it at my Christian bookstore back in Knoxville. It was a sampler, like Christian sampler CD. Kim 6A was track one. And I'll never forget hearing that freaking guitar and just being like, this is different. This is cool. I want to listen to this over and over and over. Mm-hmm. And then seventh grade was when I walked into like my Sunday school at church and they had the New Way to Be Human music video playing. And I was like, whoa, this is the same band. Oh my gosh, this is so cool. Obviously Beautiful Letdown as well. What we all did, what we all kind of gleaned from Switchfoot, number one, guitars. They are a guitar band. We are a guitar band. We've never once doubted that guitars are the coolest thing in the entire world. So it's like, well, immediately because these guys are doing it this way and they have this positive message, but they rock. It was like, they were the anchor point, that they were the only other band that we could be like, well, we don't want to be like anybody else, but the closest thing I guess we could hitch our horse to is the Switchfoot run. I don't necessarily think that that's still the same thing today. Just as their sound has changed, our sound has changed, but the sentiment is definitely still there, where it's just like, we play our music to help people feel less alone in the world. And I think that's definitely something that rings true for Switchfoot too. I don't know if we ever like truly took notes out of their book. Like, we didn't go to their shows thinking like, "Ooh, John did this, so maybe I should." Mm-hmm. I know there was, I'm gonna butcher this, but I feel like John and Caleb were having a conversation, and Caleb was kind of being like, "Man, sometimes I like kick myself for writing songs, like writing singing parts that are too high." And I think John said something to the effect of like, if you're going to go for it, you just have to fully go for it. Like, even if you can't hit that note and it turns into a scream, all the better. Like, it's, there's something about writing something that is a little bit out of your reach so that you're pushing your voice in such a way. And it, he was talking about passion. I can't remember the rest, but the sentiment, you know, just kind of being like, no. That, like, you're on the right track. Don't lower the key of the song or change the melody. Like, you're onto something. If it's like, if it feels out of reach, probably just means you just gotta push for it more or something like that.
Yeah.
Now, like, the, I know that stuck with Caleb, and I mean, as a bass player, you know, thinking about the way that Tim writes his parts, I've kind of got like two or three bass players that I truly think to myself, like, I look up to you. I want to steal things that you do. Tim is one of them. My old roommate Randall is one of them. Yeah, the way that Tim, you know, first time I heard "This Is Your Life," it's just, I thought there's no way a human is playing this. It's like, you know, sampled, like programmed or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then watching him play it live and how effortlessly he, you know, does it, it's just like, good grief, yeah. That guy's a master of his instrument. Yeah.
That bass line was the moment that I was hooked, because I had heard Meant to Live on the radio, and that's track one on the CD. And so track two, I'm in my car and I hear that, and I'm like, all right, favorite band.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a pretty epic 1-2 punch, those two songs back to back on an album.
Yep.
Yep.
I think I remember hearing Caleb talk about your previous record too, being like pushing himself vocally, and you guys as a collective pushing yourselves. And Cannonballers, I mean, one of my all-time favorite everything, the album, the tour, everything. I mean, my wife and I still talk about, you know, we saw you in Indianapolis, I think it was. And we're just like, man, that's just phenomenal, that live show. And
thank you.
Had a few kind of rapid fire questions as far as the band. Do you have a favorite Colony House song, and maybe one that's favorite to play live?
Ooh, the favorite to play live kind of changes frequently, just because, like, when you're playing, you know, either the same or a similar set list a ton, like on tour, it's like, wow, sick of that one. Can't wait for this tour to be over so I don't have to play that one anymore, which that doesn't really happen that often. There's only been one or two songs that have fallen under that category, which I might not say, just, you know, to protect myself. Favorite Colony House song, just right off the rip, it's hard not to say, like a few. I'll give you rapid fire back. The Hope Inside and Lose Control are up there for sure. Looking for Some Light, though, has had a really special, like, just, it was just special. The first time that I heard it, I was at our rehearsal space looking for a piece of gear, and I called Caleb, and he was like, hey, I don't know where that is, but you should come over to the studio real fast. And he had, like, just kind of cracked the code on the, and, or he had just done, like, a bare bones demo, and I remember we had just come out of a season where we had written tons of songs that we were like, I guess this is going to be the next record. And then he wrote Looking for Some Light, and we're like, scrap all that. This song defines what we know. We're just going to write a whole other batch of songs. And that's what became Leave the Sauce Behind. Starting with Looking for Some Light. But if I'm just going to have, if I have to pick, why even try?
Yeah.
That's the one for me.
That is my exact choice.
Wow.
So yeah,
we are alike.
Which I said to John, and, you know, we say on this pod, like, sometimes, you know, depending on what season, what time of day it is, you may have a different one, but that one, why even try, is my top. So that's pretty cool.
That one, yeah, consistently when I listen back to it, which you're not, this isn't even a question, but here's a freebie for you. Some people ask this question, some people choose not to. Do you listen to your own music? And the answer is yes, not very frequently, but whenever I do put that song on or any of our other records, It's really cool to remember, because, you know, literally when I think of why, when I listen to Why Even Try, I picture me and Will with two sets of bongos, tracking some perk stuff. And I remember we tracked it. Ben Shive was producing, and I remember we tracked a bunch of stuff, and then a section of this like bongo track accidentally got copied and pasted into the wrong spot, but it still like fit rhythmically somehow, but the accents were different. I don't know if Ben did that, if Will or me accidentally pushed something on the computer wrong, but like it was an accident. And like there's video of me and Will playing bongos and cracking up, because I mean, we're literally just sitting there going, like we're both we were intentionally trying to play in random places. And it's fun. Like I think about that, even though that song contextually, content wise, is not like a cheerful, like cracking up song, mm-hmm. given what it's about. I love that my memory of making it is laughing with my friends. Mm-hmm. And that absolutely is infused into like the jolly nature of what the drum track is. Well, there's no drums on it. Like minus the bongos, like the beat of the song is actually, I think, Caleb and Will hitting an upright piano with other stuff too. But anyway, Why Even Try? Final answer.
Yes, love it. One more before we get into the song a little bit. You guys were one of the bands that were chosen to cover a Switchfoot song for the 20-year anniversary of Beautiful Letdown. You guys did Redemption. Mm-hmm. Do you remember how that all came to be and just kind of your thoughts, that opportunity, what that whole process was like?
Yeah, basically when Switchfoot calls and asks you to do something, you say yes, unless you just literally physically can't. It's like, yeah, guys, of course. Redemption was a song that, I mean, all of Beautiful Letdown, clearly, like I'm pretty sure every band and artist that covered one of the songs probably had the moment where they're like, man, but I could have covered that one too. Oh, but that, like, they kind of all live in that space, right? But we, yeah, it was just, they literally called and were like, yo, y'all wanna do this? I'm like, of course, dummies, we'll always say yes. Ben Shive. So Ben Shive produced Leave What's Lost Behind, and him and Joe Causey co-produced When I Was Younger, our first record. Serendipitous with When I Was Younger, this is actually, this year is the 10th anniversary of that record. We teamed up with Ben. Caleb called Ben and was like, yo, we're doing the Switchfoot song. I feel like it would be cool if you did it with us. And so a lot of the heavy lifting on the front end, actually, of like, you know, figuring out the arrangement and stuff, was Caleb and Ben kind of got together and had some ideas and then brought the other dudes in. And it just kind of fell into place like super, just real natural. Mm-hmm. We've always been heavily influenced by a band called The National, and specifically the way that the drummer approaches beats. Same thing with a band called The Boxer Rebellion. And a lot of the DNA of our version of Redemption kind of started with a National meets Boxer Rebellion kind of drum beat. And we also knew that, like, despite that song being, you know, a rocker, and us being a rock and roll band, we were like, what would it be like to kind of what's the cool reserved like version of that? That's more in the kind of indie national headspace. So that's kind of it, again, it happened very quick and naturally. So like, I think there was only like three or four little sessions in the studio, but it just was like, yeah, let's do it like this. And Ben was, you know, I give a lot of praise to that guy. The way he thinks about production is super unique and always incredibly musical. So anyway, yeah.
Let's dive into the song for a minute or so. Dirty yeah. Second Hands is the one you chose. Love this one. It's been a while since I listened to it, so I was jamming to it this week from the old Gravity album. Mm-hmm. Why did you gravitate towards this one to talk about?
So mainly because I was trying to think of a Switchfoot song that, so think of the way, like, you know, when you first heard Meant to Live and then you listen to This Is Your Life and you're like, all right, I'm in. And then you, over the years, you know, anytime that you were listening to Switchfoot, it's almost like you put on your Switchfoot hat, right? You're kind of like in the ecosystem of the Switchfoot world. And you're like, well, that song meant a lot to me because of this time period. This really meant a lot to me. It helped me through this time or whatever. You know, there's all these different musical memories. And I wanted to remember something that not just musically inspired me, but made me ask the question, what is going on? Like, I got super into like heavier bands in the same time period that Switchfoot continued to put out, you know, awesome record after awesome record. Like, I was into Thrice, still one of my favorite bands. They have some amazing records. Something that Thrice used to do, you know, again, heavy band. They on one of their most influential records for me, you know, experimenting with time signature changes and key changes and things that like at the time hit me in the right spot at the right time. Like, I would get so curious about how you could raise the IQ of a song, or even rather just take an experimental song and not even bizarre it up, just like how there's so many things you can do with music. And I wanted to find one of the songs that made me go, what's going on here with Switchfoot? And that one definitely was that for me, because that was like right at the beginning of me kind of understanding how screwing around with different time signatures could like help the meaning of a song or something like that. Which
6/4, 5/4.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause like, I mean, typically if you know, 4/4 is the main one that, you know, it's like 1, 2, 3, 4, 6, 8, boom, God, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and all this different stuff. And then like what's interesting, our song Moving Forward, you know, half of it is in 5/4. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3. And you may not even realize it, because sometimes you can put things in weird time signatures that it doesn't feel that way. The intro to Silhouettes is that way. Yeah. What is that? Yeah. Anyway, I went over to the piano and I was like, I don't know how to play that guitar part. Whoops. So anyway, the Dirty Second Hands, just, it was such a thrilling song, or rather it still is a thrilling song. And I remember I can't tell you how many times I would sit there and I'd be like, okay, this section, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, wait, what is the, how many beats are they doing here? And thinking to myself, like, I don't even know how, like, sure, you could manufacture this in the studio, but how do you play it live? And I just got enamored with those kinds of thoughts and questions. And another aspect of it that just kind of wrapped up inside of that, that excited me, was like, they'd obviously proven that they can do the standard thing and like crush it. And a lot of stuff on Oh Gravity is, you know, out there for them. And it's one of my favorite records because of it, because they were just, you know, pushing the envelope for themselves. I think the Oh Gravity record, yeah, John told me a story about this it was released on Christmas Day because their team at the time said that that was a good idea, and it blew up in their face and was a terrible idea. Their sales were awful, and it kind of started. I don't know how things eventually went for them on that record cycle, but it started off on the wrong foot. And I remember John being super annoyed, like in retrospect, being like, I don't know. We didn't think it was a good idea, but we were trusting our team. And anyway, I digress about that. Yeah, there is.
I got the record for Christmas, so it was great, but I can see why.
It's so interesting. And back then you released music, you know, differently than you do now, and physical versus streaming, et cetera. We don't have to get into all that, but I do. I just remember the feeling of what the heck is this record? And some of these songs are just like crazy. And it made me listen, and it made me listen over and over. And like, I'm someone that absolutely, I'm a re-watcher and re-listener. Like, some people don't like to, like, they watch a film, like they watch a movie and then they're like, cool, that was incredible. Mm-hmm. I don't re-watch movies. I have all the respect in the world for them. I don't understand it, because if I watch a movie that I love, to the day that I die, I'm gonna keep re-watching that. Star Wars is probably at the top. Harry Potter's up there. I can't tell you how many times I watched Dumb and Dumber growing up.
Oh yeah.
Zoolander, Dodgeball. But with music, sometimes, you know, you can wear something out too much. Mm-hmm. I don't think I ever wore Oh Gravity or Dirty Secondhands out enough, just because I was like, I feel like every time I go back and listen to it, I like notice some new thing. And it's like, whoa, the reverb on the snare drum did that right there in that little tiny space. It's nuts. Mm-hmm. And maybe especially now going back and listening to it, just with kind of where I'm at personally, it's like, I can learn so much about listening back and be like, dang, I should really think about, producing drums this way, or where the bass is sitting in the mix, all those kinds of things, just like, you know, neurons firing like nuts every time listening to that one.
Yeah. I love how the Oh Gravity album is kind of right in the middle of this pocket of a lot of people's memories of Switchfoot. Beautiful Let Down, Nothing and Sound, Oh Gravity, and then Hello Hurricane, Vice Versus. Mm-hmm. So Oh Gravity, which was a little different. And I also love how, I think for most people, the first three songs off that album that they heard was Oh Gravity, Awakening, and Dirty Secondhands. So like in the middle, it's like this vintage rocker that's like, you know, they kind of tease it on some podcasts before. Mm-hmm. And it's like, all right, this is for, you know, this iconic song that fans will gravitate towards and always have. And then like the rest of the album is these different tunes. And, you know, Dirty Secondhands, I remember being so struck by it, especially like the kind of spoken word towards the end, which I don't think was in the original demo. I think they added that, which is a beautiful addition to the song, but
that's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. If I remember that right, they didn't have that initially, but that's probably my favorite part of the song. So
that's sick.
Yeah. Anything about the like lyrical messaging of the song, or do you gravitate more towards the sound first and then, or is it kind of a mix?
That song always, across the board, if I listen to a song for the first time, chances are I'm listening to the music first. And then the second time I listen, probably the music again. Third time, I'm really paying attention to the lyric. The reason for that is I grew up, I was homeschooled up until high school. And I have two older brothers, and my oldest brother used to play this video game that I wasn't allowed to play, but I was allowed to watch him play. And whenever I got old enough, or my parents said, okay, you can play it now, I had already watched him play through the entire game. And so when it was my turn to play, it's like, well, I know the story, I know what to do, so I'm going to appreciate the music, because the music was phenomenal. And it was the soundtrack to that video game that actually inspired me to create music for myself. And I think from that foundational place is why that is the way that I am with music, is when I'm writing, I'm always searching for a feeling that I find inside of the instrumental music first, and then essentially decide or find my way to whatever the lyrics would be. And I consume music the same way. My son, who's 3.5, is also a massive soundtrack fan. Like we always have just played music in the house. And now that he's, you know, just remembering stuff, his favorite right now is the soundtrack to How to Train Your Dragon, which is great, by the way. He could be wanting to listen to like stuff that's definitely not nearly as fun for us to listen to alongside him. But he loves recount, you know, he'll stop what he's doing and be like, this is the part where Toothless gets Astrid and they're flying in the air and he looks and he smiles and then they're flying in the sunset and this is the part. And he's like naming all these memories and it's pretty incredible to watch. And that's kind of how I am. And even just thinking about the first chorus of Dirty Secondhands for me, I could not tell you the lyrics right now, but I can picture the guitar moves on the fretboard and the feeling of kind of disorientation that I got the first time that I heard it. Cause it's a very diagonal song. Like when I'm listening to it, I'm like, I can't stand straight up. I'm kind of like, whoa, what is this? It's abrasive and weird. And I love that because they did that when they did that, it helps frame how I go back and listen to the songs before it and the songs after it, because it's like, it's almost like you get a little Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, like John's got a little bit of a crazy side to him and it isn't just the Walk to Remember voice. You know what I mean? Like that's kind of how I visualize these different songs, like timestamps a little bit. And feel free to enlighten me. I have no idea what the song Dirty Secondhands is about.
Which is okay. I mean, because it just bangs the way it is and, you know, doesn't have to, you know, reaches people in different ways. They go crazy on this one live, too. I went back and saw some old YouTube videos, and especially at the end of the song, they were going nuts, which was a cool.
I'm going to have to do that. When we hop off this call, I'm going to go look up some of those videos.
Yeah. Well, this may help a little bit. I always read, you know, at least a little something of what John wrote about it as far as lyrics and portion, you know, the meaning of the song. So when it came out, he said, "The machine, the clock, our own hands, the dirty second hand of time is always ticking, bringing us and all that we have worked so hard to achieve closer to the grave and the secondhand store. In my fight with depression, lust, pride, and boredom, I found that the biggest challenger is often within me, the very machinery that I loathe and have fought so hard to defeat, stares back at me from the mirror. This mechanism is always ticking. And in my spiritual life, I've found that this is a part of me that has to die every day if I am to be truly alive."
Dang. Spoken truly like old Johnny boy himself.
Yep. And as a side note, whenever that spoken word would come on, I would always try to imitate it. "Are you really as tough as you think, you bleeb?" And then halfway through, like, oh, I lost it. I can't do it.
That's kind of how I am whenever, are you a Foo Fighters fan at all?
A little bit. Yeah.
So the song Monkey Wrench off their second record, it's not spoken word. It's more just, you know, yelling. It's like the bridge. And when I'm really pissed off, I'll be honest with you, when I'm needing to yell, I'll put that on while I'm driving and I'll try to keep up with this. Cause it's like a one more time at everything. Oh, that, like, it's one of those things where it's just like really rigid. And I usually can't make it. And I guarantee that the way he recorded it was he had, you know, several vocal tracks and couldn't actually hold, like keep that, do it all with that one breath, but I try to every time. And yeah, it's like, ah, I'll leave it to old Dave. Leave it to old John.
Yep. I was my dad and I went to this Supercross this weekend, and they on the big screen was like some commercial, and your song "Oh Yeah" came on, and so I was this is a pump up jam right here.
That's so tight. We were lucky enough to have "Oh Yeah" be featured in a Super Bowl commercial this year, and we got a party because of it. And whenever, you know, anytime it would cut to commercials, everyone would shut. Like everyone was just talking, not paying attention to the game. And then the commercial starts like, shut up, shut up, shut up. Is it going to be on? And we someone got a video recording of us when it came on. We just lost our minds. That it's funny. That song is just it. Talk about a dark horse of a song that mm-hmm. has actually done some good business for us. And when we play it live, it's also it's kooky. I'll say that. And you know, I definitely think that we go. You know, thinking about threads that tie us to Switchfoot or things that we, you know, notes have taken out of their book. Not to say that we did it intentionally, but like with songs like Dirty Second Hands and records like Oh Gravity, where they're taking risks. Mm-hmm. That's definitely something that we have tried to not even emulate, but like we just tried to embody that same spirit of like, you know what? There's no rules in music. So we yeah, why not write a Beastie Boys-esque type song?
Yeah.
I bet Switchfoot would do that. Not that we were never thinking of it that way, saying it that way, yeah. But, you know, Oh Gravity, again, being a really good example of a lot of stuff on that doesn't sound like that they've never done since and didn't do before. And I hope that even if it's just a song here or an EP there, like we always, and we all just love all sorts of styles of music too. So it's mm-hmm. fun to exercise different musical muscles and yeah.
Yeah. Well, it truly has been an honor to watch you guys grow. And man, I just, again, that tour and album, woo, so good. And can't wait for more. I don't know if you guys have any plans for in 2024 or, you know, what's next? Anything to tease for us? Anything?
Well, we actually just, you know, a handful of days ago announced a couple When I Was Younger specific shows in Nashville that we sold out two nights, put a third one up, sold that out, put a fourth one up and sold that out. So that's kind of on the horizon for us. And really this year's mainly a season to be right. I mean, we've already been writing and trying to be diligent about giving ourselves enough time and space at home to write and record, but also you never know. When was it? 2 years ago, I think it was a Friday afternoon. We got a call. No, a Saturday afternoon. We got a call to fill in at a festival the next day. And we said yes. And that's that hasn't really happened very often, but when stuff comes up that we're able to jump on board, you can count on us. So, I can't really tease, not really anything to tease exactly. You know, we'll be celebrating When I Was Younger. Can't wait for those shows, but really trying to be good about writing and recording. So
yeah. That's enough of a tease for me to know that it's in the process for, you know, cooking up something for what's next.
Oh yeah, definitely.
We look forward to it. Thank you for all you guys are doing and inspiring people like me, and not only the musical side, but the faith side, the life side, all that stuff has been awesome. So thanks for joining us today as well.
Thanks, Tyler. Appreciate it. This was great.